for a lot of these businesses, take a fast food restaurant as an example. You know, it's very difficult for them to make that direct connection back to a farm. If they open a case of takeout containers at their restaurant, it'll have a little identifying number on the case, and Genera can trace that all the way back to the farm that that feedstock was produced on. And so when you really think about that connection, it is a true connection. We can tell them what farmer grew that. We could show them the field if we wanted to. It's the authentic experience on the farm. And I don't know how else to put that. That connection to the farm and interacting one-on-one with a farmer just tells the entire story.
It's time for conversations about our food and how it's grown on Farm to Table Talk with your host, Roger Wasson.
The pandemic has been a nightmare for restaurants, but a dream come true for curbside, carryout, and delivery. We cheer the climate-friendly effects of some of our forced changes, but what about all those styrofoam and other non-recyclable packages that are encasing all of that takeout food or home deliveries? What if the packaging is grown on a farm just like the food and could also be traced back to the farm it grew on? Well, that's happening now in Tennessee, where farmers are growing switchgrass that is processed into packaging for takeout containers. Native grasses like switchgrass are perennials that can grow to 8 to 10 feet high every year without replanting. The roots go as deep as the plant is tall, building the soil and requiring minimal water. Native grasses for packaging will not typically be more valuable than major cash crops, but they help make full use of fringe and marginal land on many farms across the country, and may have a future in California, where new water pumping regulations are expected to cause many Central Valley farms to fallow as much as a third of their acreage. Farmers in East Tennessee are being recruited by Genera to grow ag fiber pulp like switchgrass to produce compostable, fully plant-based food service products for to-go containers. Genera CEO Kelly Tiller and Vice President Sam Jackson join us to connect the dots from fields of perennial renewable grasses to a guilt-free packaging of our delivered lunch. So we can say, I know who grew the food, who grew the package. Kelly and Sam, welcome to Farm to Table Talk. So what's it like when you bring a food service customer to a farm that has fields of 8-foot tall switchgrass growing that will be made into their to-go containers?
There is nothing like taking a customer out to the farm to let them see the feedstock growing in the field, to let them interact one-on-one with that farmer, because, you know, at the heart of it, this is all about agriculture. And so getting them connected in a way that they never really dreamed of being possible for their business directly to a farmer, so that the farmer can stand there and say, you know, I farmed this for the last 30 years, but we see this as a great new crop for our system. It helps support our overall operation. And I've got beef cattle over here and I've got corn and beans over there. You know, it's that connection to the land that I think ultimately draws that customer in, and they really see the sustainability of what we're growing from a feedstock perspective, but they also see directly what they're doing to tie their business back to agriculture and to support farming. You know, everybody likes green space. Everybody wants to see farming prosper and continue. But for a lot of these businesses, take a fast food restaurant as an example. You know, it's very difficult for them to make that direct connection back to a farm. With the Genera product system and the way we trace our product, if they open a case of takeout containers at their restaurant, it'll have a little identifying number on the case, and Genera can trace that all the way back to the farm that that feedstock was produced on. And so when you really think about that connection, it is a true connection. We can tell them what farmer grew that. We could show them the field if we wanted to. It's the authentic experience on the farm. And I don't know how else to put that. It's been amazing, whether it's a customer or a government agency or a finance company, you know, in terms of investors. That connection to the farm and interacting one-on-one with a farmer just tells the entire story. I mean,
I love that. And one thing that strikes me when you say that is that using that in some other cases is because they were concerned about tracing for food safety and pathogens. That's not really a question with your product. I mean, you don't have to worry about that whole processing stage. There's not going to be salmonella or E. coli or listeria or something. And it's more of that reinforcement than, I guess, of that it's authentic and that to see the farm connection in your case rather than food safety.
Absolutely. Today, the vast majority of these takeout products, takeout containers and things like that, that are made out of fiber are imported from Asia. They're all from China or India or somewhere in between. And it's nigh on impossible to have that same traceability in that supply chain. So beyond even the traceability, it's just there's a total disconnect there when you're importing something like that from overseas. And again, you put those two products side by side on a table and you can follow a domestically produced genera product all the way back to the farm. It's just a tremendous opportunity for that business to understand their connection, but also to convey that connection of agriculture to their customers, right? So If I go to a fast food place or a quick service restaurant, I think is the official term, you know, when you go in there and you get your packaging, you as a consumer want to feel good about what you're buying. You want to feel good about the beef on the hamburger. You want to feel good about the flour that was in the bun. But at the same time, this gives them an opportunity to give that same feeling in the packaging that it comes in to you as it leaves the restaurant. And that's something that's not really been done before.
Kelly, have you been out to take people out and show them some of the farms that are growing your switchgrass and so forth?
I have. It's, you know, those are always good days. I very fortunate. I grew up very close to here, just a few miles from here. Both sets of grandparents had farms in this area. And so, you know, there's just it's a great thing to be able to visit farms in this area and know that we're having an impact.
In that part of the country, there's a fair amount of cattle grown. There's pastures. And you were mentioning corn and soybeans too. There used to be tobacco, not so much as there used to be. And now there's cannabis that's taking the place of tobacco and some of those areas as well. But you have to make a case to a farmer of why he should have switchgrass to produce whatever you're needing for this material instead of corn or soybeans. How do you do that?
So to be quite honest with you, we don't view it as an instead of situation. We view it as an additive market for the farmer. So if a grower in our region is producing corn or soybeans on a piece of ground and it's providing him a solid economic return, you know, 4 years out of five, something like that, if it's producing a good positive return, that's what that land should be in. We're not going to advocate that they would replace that with something else. But when we look at the quality of farmland in this region, you know, we're not the Midwestern Corn Belt. We don't have the super high productivity soils, and we have what I would consider a lot more of the marginal or lower in productivity soils. So in general, a majority of our farms in this particular area would have a field that's often lying fallow or a field that they just haven't used for much in the last few years. It's not producing an economic return, or it could be a significant acreage of pasture that they're not managing well. They're not fertilizing. They're just kind of grazing cattle on it as they can. Well, both of those scenarios offer a great situation for the farmer to increase the level of management on an acre, plant a switchgrass or a biomass sorghum or something like that, and produce some revenue off that acre. And so the vast majority of farmers that we work with, we don't work with them to replace an existing crop or an existing operation on their farm. We're helping them utilize the back 40, if you will, that they've not been using in a good economic way for the last few years to produce an added revenue line to the operation. So we want to be additive, and we want to make sure that the farmer just has access to yet another market to help give them a little stability in the farm operation.
One of the benefits of, particularly of switchgrass, for example, is it is a very deep rooted plant. As a native perennial warm season grass, if you see 8 to 10 feet of biomass above ground, there's also 8 to 10 feet of these fine filament like roots below ground. And so what it makes it very drought tolerant year in, year out. So once it's well established, it can withstand that 100-year drought, you know, some really dry conditions. And yeah, you may suffer a little bit of yield loss that year, but you're not going to lose your plant and you're still going to have an attractive yield. Whereas things like corn, soybeans, it's a total loss.
So there are some other benefits as well. I'm sorry. So it comes back every year?
Yes, switchgrass is perennial.
Now, that's pretty darn interesting in itself, too. Are you familiar with the Land Institute in Kansas? They've done a lot of research on some of the crops that are that they're looking at how they can go 15 feet or so down into the roots and into the ground. That's very, very intriguing.
Yeah, I mean, historically, you know, when Lewis and Clark were exploring the western part of the U.S., when they were writing about seeing the herds of, you know, 10,000 plus buffalo at a time, switchgrass is a part of that native prairie grass mixture. Those buffalo were grazing on switchgrass at the time. So, you know, not only is it a perennial, but it is native. And as Kelly said, it has lots of soil quality benefits. It's a great fit all the way around for a crop. And that perennial nature of the plant does help us as we work with farmers as well. There's something very attractive about planting that crop one time. And I was in a field of ours not long ago, just a week or two ago, that has been in the ground now about 11 years and has, you know, continued to produce just fine with proper management. So definitely a long-lived crop. And again, that's another aspect of it that helps it fit into the farm operation in that it takes less management. It's less intensive than some of the other crops or cattle that they're raising, which gives them still that flexible time to do all of those if they want.
So you're not going out there and cultivating or spraying or doing all those other things you typically do?
Not for switchgrass. You know, in the first year, the year of establishment, you're going to do some site preparation. We prefer to do all that through a no-till planting scenario. So you'll want to do some weed control in advance of planting. But then once you plant your switchgrass, you may have to do a little bit more weed control that year. But typically once switchgrass is established and comes back in the second year, the only things that you really need to do on an annual basis are put some minimal fertilizer out in the spring and cut it in the fall and winter.
How tall is it when you harvest it?
It's tall. It's an impressive grass. So there's a couple of varieties of switchgrass in the U.S. There's a northern adapted variety that I would call an upland variety. And then there's what we grow in the south where there's a longer growing season, warmer temperatures, and it's called lowland. On the lowland varieties here in the southeast, it will get easily 8 feet tall in the field in a given growing season.
Yeah.
I've seen some go to 9-10 feet tall, produces about 6 dry tons per acre. So it's a pretty formidable crop. But it's very high yielding, as I said, and it actually has some great wildlife benefits as well because it's a clumping grass. And so while it may be 8 feet tall in the field, there's lots of space on the ground for, you know, quail and turkey and songbirds and all sorts of things to use that structure for habitat. We've had everything from rare songbirds all the way up to black bears and wild boars in our switchgrass fields. So it's a pretty good fit on the landscape.
Yeah, well, I kind of want to know the fields that had the wild boars in them before I went walking down through them. So
it is planted generally in the spring, as, you know, similar to most other crops. But one big difference is we don't harvest until after the first killing frost. And then we have about a 4 month, at least in this area of the country, we have about a 4 month harvest window. So that's roughly November through the end of February, maybe on into March. And that's a time of year when a lot of our local farmers, their equipment isn't being utilized otherwise. Their labor may not be in high demand. So we're really not competing for time and attention and equipment during prime harvest season. And there's a long window to do it. So it gives them the opportunity to kind of, you know, leisurely or at least selectively choose when they're going to harvest that.
You know, it's a really, really interesting crop and interesting program you're in.
You know, it's been really an interesting process and dynamic we've experienced. You know, what we've seen, Sam said earlier, just how impactful it is for folks to actually get here, to see the farms, to see, you know, put all the pieces together right in front of you, not just on a piece of paper. So it really has been you know, I wouldn't say an easy sell, but it's, but it is, it's a very compelling story to tell. You know, the biggest challenge we have is just getting the opportunity to tell it. We appreciate you and your listeners, and, you know, hope to educate more people about these opportunities. This is new. This is not something that's been done a whole lot in the U.S. You know, as we said earlier, it is done very frequently outside the U.S., but I do think it's a great and growing opportunity here. And for in cases where we actually can, you know, tell the whole story, put the pieces of the puzzle together, it really is a compelling story.
And Sam, when you're out talking to people that might be purchasing the products right now, how are you able to convince them to pass the story on? I'm just curious. Are you able to, you were saying earlier that you're able to connect it back and they could know the farmer that's growing the products. Have you any of the customers that you're working with that are doing that are putting the story about the sourcing of the product for the packaging that does connect it all the way back to your farms?
Yeah, certainly. So, you know, anytime you're selling a product, price matters. So price is a key point there. But only, I think, the second thing that comes into conversation like that after price is that story, because everybody in the industry is looking for that marketing edge or that sustainability piece that really resonates with the end consumer, the general person that's purchasing the food and utilizing that container. And so it's not a very difficult sell at all for us to work with our customers and to get them to utilize this true farm to table sort of scenario and tie in all of that backstory to that product. A couple of our customers are companies that sell only sustainable products. And so, you know, it's already ingrained in their culture. But, you know, other customers are more what I would call traditional distributors. They'll distribute fiber products like what we're making, but they also have plastics and box boards and you know, you name it, they'll have the whole suite of food service products. So there it's a little bit different. But again, their customers, the restaurants, the chains, the institutions, are already engaging them about how can I be more sustainable? How can I make my operation more sustainable? And so that then trickles back up that they're looking for those sustainable products. So once we get the customer on board, you know, in a discussion, it's a very, very easy connection to make in terms of helping them to see the value of tracing this product all the way back to the farm and kind of engaging that story all the way through.
And if people want to know more about the story, where do they find information? Either about if they're interested in purchasing some of the products, know more about it, or maybe even in farmers too that would like to get plugged in.
So anyone interested in any aspect of that can visit our website, which is GeneraInc.com. And there we have a portal for farmers where you can come in and learn more about our individual crops and get more connected on our feedstock manager side of things. But then we also have some information there on our products as well. And so that's probably the best place to start from either end. And then you can get connected to the right person through the website there.
It's a great story. And Kelly, as CEO, what's your priorities for the near term now?
We're at a really exciting time for the business right now. We are completing construction of our first large-scale commercial manufacturing facility here in Von Ohr, Tennessee. We're just a couple of months away from startup of that facility. And so that certainly is occupying most all of our time right now. But, you know, looking beyond that, once we cross this hurdle, there are a lot of other opportunities throughout the country. And, you know, really based on customer demand, our challenge is, you know, just moving quickly to address that demand and bring this opportunity to other locations.
I'm wondering if there's anything that we can do to encourage people to not only ask where their food was produced, but where the packaging came from. You know, and you're absolutely really making me thinking that differently, because typically that's what you do. You just say, okay, you should know your farmer. But usually that ended with just the food. And now to say that you should know your farmer all the way to what it comes in and the packaging and so forth, that's new. I really appreciate that.
Well, you know, it's interesting. We have a local chain restaurant here, just like I'm sure you do in California, where you go in and sit down, and on the menu, it'll say, you know, today's beef was provided by X farm, and today's tomatoes were grown on X farm. Well, very much so, we envision, and your package today comes from X farm. I mean, it can be, literally be that connected. And so it is truly completing that whole farm to table package, in that the food, everything that went into it, as well as the package you're taking it home in, came directly from a farm and ties all the way back to agriculture.
Yeah, you know, and another benefit we have is relative to things like styrofoam, it's pretty obvious. If you get one of these molded fiber containers that is made from agricultural products, it looks very earthy. You know, the color is very, it's the that really nice earthy shade of a light brown. And it has some of the little flecks, and you can see some of the little actual fibers in it. And you can't, but it has a very nice soft, you know, feel to it, almost a plastic type finish. So it's very high quality, but it just, it looks earthy, I guess is the best way to describe it. You know, you don't get that from your styrofoam. And I think people more and more are really making that connection and appreciating and just recognizing that when they see it. Most things don't wind up, you know, stark white without a lot of intervention.
Well, and then also most things end up in a landfill somewhere. And your products are, you're able to put, are they able to be going to compost, or is there other ways to recycle the product when it's through?
So the nice thing about these molded fiber type products is they can go a variety of routes. So yes, they are recyclable. So they can go into your normal recycling stream, and they would be recovered just like any other fiber would be, whether it was in paper or something else. But they can also be composted. So most of our products can be certified to the ASTM spec for composting, which means that they will compost in a commercial facility within 90 days. So it's a very quick process. But again, if they do wind up in a landfill, or you want to put them in your backyard compost bin, they'll compost and break down there too. It just typically will take longer. You know, commercial composting operations are managed. The piles are turned. They're really well managed. But we've done a number of tests just putting our products out into a compost bin in the backyard, and they break down in a very short period of time with no residual effects. So, you know, it's a very sustainable product. We actually have developed a brand around it called Earthable, and it really stems from this concept of you grow the plant from the earth, and then it can return to the earth in the end of its life cycle. So when we compare these to plastics or other petroleum-based products, you know, those products have a lifespan of hundreds, if not a thousand years, where you can still detect them in the environment. Again, ours will compost in a commercial setting in 90 days. So it's a very different life cycle.
And that's interesting. Kelly, did we leave anything out? Is there something that you wanted to bring up that we haven't covered in our conversation yet?
No, I think you've done a great job covering it all. There really just are a wide variety of benefits and you know, reasons to be excited about this, and we're glad to get to talk about it.
Well, I'm excited about it. I heard about everything there was to hear about farm to table, but this whole idea of taking this a step further and also knowing what is coming in, and that can be grown on a farm too. I really appreciate your sharing that with us on Farm to Table Talk. Sam Jackson and Kelly Tiller, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Farm to Table Talk with your host, Roger Wasson.